everybody, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Tinseltown. And I am very excited today because this is something I really want to do, is talk to other classic movie fans who are bloggers and they write, you know, fabulous stuff. They know their stuff. And this is my first one, and she's fabulous. Her name is Leah Williams. Thanks for coming on, Leah.
Thank you. I'm excited to talk with you.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And her blog is Cary Grant Won't Eat You, the blog for phobics. What's that about, the phobic blog?
Well, I was trying to reach people who typically didn't like or were resistant to classic movies. And a friend of mine told me that she was resistant because she was intimidated. There was just too much out there. And I thought, well, that's a fun way to put it, you know, classic movies for phobics. And that's where the title came from, was just this idea that they're not intimidating at all.
No, they're wonderful. Just, mm-hmm. Yet I know a lot of people do get intimidated because, especially when you know so much, but I'm not around like people who don't watch them. I'm not saying, oh yes, I watched Portrait of Jenny the other night and I loved the direction in that. You know, I don't talk like that. Neither do you. Know what I mean? So
no,
I don't intimidate. I put people in front of the TV. We watch, and I've really turned a lot of people onto classic movies. They love it. They didn't think they would, but you know, a lot of people just won't do it, which is something.
Oh, that's wonderful. You've had so much success. I keep working on it.
You're doing great. And we're going to plug you. And I put you on my websites. And we're going to do all that stuff. So you're going to do wonderfully.
Thank you.
And I want you on again because I already love you. I already have our themes going.
You.
Okay. And we're also in the same time zone. How wonderful is that?
That always helps.
Okay, so somehow you guys, you know, I started my Tinseltown podcast probably late March, maybe beginning of April. And I don't know what I Googled, but I found Leah's blog. And what I found was like a ding, 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 ding. It was Stella Dallas's Everyday Villain. The husband. Oh my God. I even posted it on my Facebook page there. I said, this is so right on. He is such a monster. So, this is for a blogathon.
Mm-hmm. The Great Villain Blogathon.
I love those. So
I do too.
How did you come up with Steven?
Well, I was watching Stella Dallas again, and I hadn't watched it for many years, and I'd never been a huge fan because I hated this sort of idea that we were supposed to think that this sacrifice of her child in the end was a good idea. You know, I always thought it was a horrible thing.
So did
to
I.
Do.
It made me sad. I just got angry.
Yes, it's so upsetting, and it's a terrible idea, and it just was very disturbing to me, so I wasn't sure I wanted to see it, but it was playing at a local theater in the big screen.
Ooh,
and I
cool.
wanted to, exactly. I wanted to see Barbara Stanwyck on the big screen. So, and I watched it, and I think, you know, part of the reason I don't think I'd noticed just how awful he was in earlier versions is she's just so riveting.
Yes, she is.
That she's riveting as a character and she's riveting as an actress. And so this was the first time I started watching it and thinking, wait a minute. Everything this man is doing is horrible, and he's basically setting the stage for what happens in the end, that he's completely eroded her self-confidence to such an extent that she thinks this is a good idea.
Well, he's such a creep. He's a creep.
He's terrible. Yes, from beginning to end in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And
I just want to say the actor John Bowles is mm-hmm. gross too. I mean, he's been in Backstreet. He's been in The Age of Innocence. He's just really, why would anyone hire him? Because he's like, you hate him immediately.
You
and
do.
He's a stiff.
Oh, he's so boring. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason why she's doing these things that are upsetting to him. She's trying to have fun, and he's sort of, you know, fun repellent. So yes. She can't actually have a good time with him because he's so dull. And every time she tries to have a good time, he tries to squash it.
He's just a creep. Okay. So do you have your blog in front of you?
Yes.
Okay. So you want to, want to read from "No, This Time I Kept Observing How With a Less Monstrous Husband."
Right. "No, This Time I Kept Observing How Completely Awful This Man Is and How With a Less Monstrous Husband, Stella Would Have Spent Her Middle Age in Daughter Laurel's Sweet Company Instead of Off on Her Lonely, Destitute Own. Let's Review Just How Villainous This Creep Is."
Yes. Okay. Go, take it away.
Okay. So the first reason is that he doesn't seem to be giving any child support to his daughter. So when you see, do you want me to read through it or do you want me
sure.
to just?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. So reason number one, child support. Sure, Stephen splurges on his daughter, but only when she's with him. When Stella and Laurel are on their own, their homespun clothing and Stella's frequent repairs to it make evident they're just scrimping by on the arrears of his salary, despite the fact that Stella and he never divorced. Meanwhile, he's living it up in fine clothes with his wealthy girlfriend in New York, with his daughter only looking smart when she's with him.
That is sickening, and I wondered about mm-hmm. that. He just takes off, la-di-da-di-da.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Stella actually, she copies things that she sees in store windows for Lolly, mm-hmm. and she actually makes some nice clothes for her, you
yes.
know, but she doesn't get to buy them because they're broke. And
no,
it's disgraceful. Shame, shame, shame on him and his wealthy girlfriend and her three boys.
And it's really funny later in the film when you see the girlfriend looking through the clothes that Stella has made. She'll say, "Oh, isn't she clever for making these clothes instead of buying them?" It's such a hilarious moment because we know as viewers, well, that's because he didn't buy them for her, right? She had to make them because he wasn't clearly providing enough income for her to buy any dresses for her.
And Stella also said, always sends her books, just books, nothing else, like on her birthday or Christmas or something, books. He sends
yes.
her books. And she said, why doesn't he send her a fur coat? I love it.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. So what's next?
So the second reason was that he wants to change his wife's behavior, but he thinks his own stuffy self perfect.
Yes.
Maybe. And maybe going in the sort of, I just wrote that maybe going dancing right after childbirth was pushing it, but Stella's efforts to enjoy herself afterwards stem from her love for company and music and fun. Stephen, acting disgusted by the lack of refinement of others, but really stung with jealousy, can't help himself from looking down on those who entertain his wife. The fact that he makes zero effort to amuse her himself doesn't seem to cross his mind. Apparently, his tedious business acquaintances are the only company he'll allow his wife. Instead, he wants to correct her manners, her clothes, her wording. "I'll take my usual lecture," she says, when she returns from the brief dance he allows her. As she rightly points out, he could use some correction himself. Surely everyday kindness is good etiquette, right, spoil sport? As she, as she points out after he starts condescending to her, apparently treatment she's been enduring since their marriage. How would it be for you to do a little adapting for a change? I don't see you giving up anything.
And that is the truth. But do you remember mm-hmm. before, you know, she seemed much more refined even in her own home before she married Stephen. But in the beginning, she was putting on this, like, you know, darling
yeah.
act. And she said, "I'm trying to learn and change my ways." And what does Stephen tell her? "Don't try to change your ways. I like you just as you are, Stella."
Well, it's a common refrain, of course, in any marriage, right?
Right,
oh,
or dating.
Then,
yeah.
Right. And then instantly try to change the person you're with. But it was just sort of striking, especially I thought it was so interesting that she wouldn't go to New York with him. And I thought, you know, this is why he won't let her just be who she is. And she knows if she goes with him, that her whole life is going to be like this. She won't have her family around her. She won't have any of her support network. She'll just be stuck with this man lecturing her about her manners all day.
Yes, and her clothing and her everything.
Exactly.
He's such a creep. Oh, Stephen Dallas.
Exactly. Well, I even noticed something funny that I'd forgotten to mention in the blog post, where she gets back from giving birth and she's so excited to be away from the hospital. And there's this pile of cards that he didn't even bother to give her while she was in the hospital. So she said, well, oh, this is so great. I thought everybody had forgotten about me. So all these people are sending her these cards when she's in the hospital, you know, giving birth to his child, and he doesn't even bother to give them to her.
Did he mention why?
No, she just sort of says something, well, why didn't she give these to me before? I would have been, you know, less bored. And then she just sort of moves on. But it's just, I thought it was such an interesting moment because it again shows if the entertainment isn't coming from him, he doesn't want her to have it.
And there ain't no entertainment coming from him, let's face it.
No, exactly.
Steph Stella. he doesn't change, you know, he does nothing to change or compromise. He's such a creep. So number three.
Number three, he invites his daughter to stay with him and his mistress. Just dressed up in finery and wealth or not, Helen Morrison is romancing a married man. Her little boys being around maybe intended to make her overtures to adulterer Stephen more palatable, but I found it creepy. And how about the surprise of springing the mistress on his daughter, saying where they were going was a secret, but this place was the most beautiful place in the world, and letting his daughter just take the invitation as a nice time with a nice lady.
Really creepy. Creepy.
Yes.
Okay, there
and
we go.
Laurel is so oblivious to it, kind of cracks me up. I think she doesn't seem like the brightest bulb character.
No, she
in the world.
Doesn't. She's very nice girl. But no.
Yeah, she's very sweet, but she doesn't catch on that this is inappropriate. Mm-mm. She goes back and brags to her mother about how beautiful this woman is who supplanted her. And what I find really strange, too, in watching it is that they have all this sentimental music going on whenever Helen is on screen, as if we're supposed to think this is a beautiful idyllic moment when she's, you know, hanging with the mistress of her father.
And I really, really, you know, I like the actress because I can't stand her in movies. Generally,
<true.
laughs> when I see her, she doesn't play really nice women. And yeah, you know, it just like annoys you. Oh, your mother. And it's condescending to the way she treats Laurel up in the room. Oh, and all the boys washed their ears and took baths and put on their best clothes to meet you. And she's so refined and classy. What really was sad to me was when Laurel came home and she's gushing about her trip and the beautiful lady, and she has a picture of the lady. And Stella's, you know, jealous. She's listening to this, and she's putting, I don't know, she's putting cream on her face or, you know, doing her roots or something. And she says, oh, let me see her. And she said, how old is she? She said, oh, about 23. Oh, she doesn't have any age. She's the most beautiful lady. And then Stella tries to take the picture. And she says, mother, you're getting it all dirty. And poor Stella, you know, so she wipes it off. And Stella feels terrible. And then Laurel feels terrible. And then she starts, you know, coloring Stella's roots. Awful.
Yes, and she feels bad for her, but I also think that's isn't this such an interesting moment that she, you know, what Stella could have done was say, by the way, this is your father's mistress. This is completely inappropriate. You know, what's happening here is not okay. And she doesn't. And I think this sort of amazing restraint where she tries to let her daughter, you know, enjoy the company of this woman because she knows that this woman is important to her husband. And then therefore, you know, her treating her daughter well is important. I mean, I get it. It's just you're so impressed with her as a parent in this moment. And I think the contrast between her behavior and the husband's, again, is really, really obvious.
Yeah. He's amazing to me. I mean, really, throughout the whole movie, he is just such a such a stiff and just thoughtless and clueless, and he has no empathy. I'm sure he has a high IQ, but I would go his EQ is minus 10. You know what I mean? It's like, get out of here, Stephen. You stink.
Yes. So, I might be generous even, minus 10.
Yes. Jeez, but that's it. You know, so we're supposed to believe that Stella's the bad guy. Well, he's just whooping it up with these people.
Yes, and getting jealous of her every time that he sees this friend of hers, Ed, and this person. I mean, she just has this casual friendship with this man, but every time he sees him, he's just completely shocked and offended, and as if he's not hooking up with his mistress in New York. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't want Lolly around her. I mean, but, you know, Ed doesn't mean what. He doesn't mean anything. He's like a...
No.
He was always Stella's friend from the beginning, and then he became an alcoholic. And
yes.
Okay. Do you remember the Miss Philibrand situation?
The witch situation? I'm sorry.
Miss Philibrand came to Stella's house. Laurel is such a lovely girl. And I was wondering if I could steal her for a weekend and take her to Boston, to the museums and to the art houses.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And then they go on the train. She's with Ed.
With the itching powder.
Right.
Yes.
And Mrs. Philibrand happens to be on it.
And she's the one who's so offended.
And spreads the word so no one goes to Laurel's birthday party.
Right. And it's again, this just sort of contrast between this woman who's openly living with a married man and gets... No, you know, as far as we can see, no pushback.
No, I don't
and
think
then
so.
there's Stella with some itching powder with her friends.
And she didn't do it. He did it. And right. She's just giggling and having fun.
Yes. She's just enjoying it. And it's like the most scandalous thing ever.
Miss Philibrand. Oh, that was awful.
she's terrible.
Okay, number four. Go on.
Oh, no, and just to use that to destroy this child's birthday party.
She's supposed to think is darling and lovely.
Yes.
And she takes it out on Laurel like a monster.
She and Stephen would get along.
Oh, right. Yeah. Maybe Miss Philibrand. Maybe Stephen is her illegitimate son.
It could totally be that.
I'd love it. Okay, give us number four.
So he steals his daughter away at Christmas. And he shows up for a surprise Christmas visit to lure his daughter away with an hour's notice.
Creep.
And you see this second of compassion when he even admits he's selfish, which is really the only time in the film he seems to acknowledge this.
Yes.
But then, of course, Ed shows up, and so he decides that he's going to be cruel again. And, you know, and again, this is what's so hilarious is he's being all judgmental about her friend being over when he's openly admitting that he's taking his daughter to stay with his mistress for the holidays.
What if Stella had been going out with like a Mr. Swain Scott III? Do you think that still would have mattered to him rather than like Ed? Do you think?
I wonder that because I think on the one hand, you know, he feels like he can comfortably look down on Ed and he's disgusted by Ed. But I don't really think, I think if it were someone who was, you know, someone he thought he was, who was his equal, it might actually be worse.
Because he'd be more jealous and want to get her away even quicker?
Yeah. I mean, he tried to take his child, you know, the child away from her just because she was hanging out with some people who were partying. He said, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to take her away from you.
And then
you,
she
right?
started crying and she said, you will never take my baby. And all she was drinking was sarsaparilla. Stella didn't even drink.
No.
So in that Christmas thing was awful. And then there goes Laurel, you know, and leaves Stella all alone because of course Ed is, you know, just drunk. And It was really mean, and I thought, you know, Laurel, really. But then she doesn't like him either. She doesn't like
She doesn't like Ed.
Yeah, she thinks he's vulgar. Okay.
Yes.
Number five.
Well, the big one, of course, is that he does not dissuade Stella from giving up her daughter. So I wrote that Laurel may be more refined in dress and manners than her mother, but she's got a beating heart, unlike her lizard father. And sooner or later, the smugness of this beyond boring, classy family she's marrying into. And seriously, is it possible for these people to be more cliched and dull?
No.
It's just, they're so insufferable.
Oh, darling.
Yes, it's going to get to her. I mean, she was reared in a very different way. She'll need her mom so that they can rip on this crazy family she's married into together. But the mom's never going to be around because, of course, Stella's husband has so crushed his wife's self-esteem over the years that she's, you know, confusing this sort of lack of fashion knowledge and deportment with what really matters, right? Caring about her daughter, being an empathetic human being. And this is what basically enables the ending to happen. And well, so I think it's, yeah.
She gives up everything for her daughter.
Yes.
This is her love. But I think it first started, remember when Stella's like, I'm going to have some fun too. He never gives me a penny. I'm going to go and live it up. So they go to that big fancy schmancy resort and Laurel gets in with the cool crowd and this guy. Stella gets sick the whole time and we see her like chowing down on bonbons and cookies.
Exactly.
And she's like, and reading movie magazines, and finally she's ready to go. And it's like she put on 10 pounds in her butt that week.
Yes.
And she's all bangles and everything. And then she tries to get out there and, you know, everybody's like, oh, aghast at this creature.
Yes.
And then she goes to a place and Laurel hides from her because they're all making fun of her. She's with her boyfriend and everything and hides. And then what happens? And then Laurel says, I want to leave. And she's like, I can't, you know, she was upset with Laurel because she said, I haven't had any fun yet. But then they get on the train and I think mom's sleeping downstairs and Laurel's upstairs and mom hears the rotten snotty girls. Oh, that's, can you believe that? That's Laurel something's mother. Oh, that nice girl had that mother, you know? So that really, I think that was the first real jarring thing, more so than Stephen, because she didn't like Stephen at all, but
no,
but that was pretty awful. And she wanted her to have like that Ted guy who she was in love with or whatever. So I think that started, don't you, a little bit?
Well, I think that, yeah, that's the scene when she starts to think maybe, you know, her presence is going to harm her daughter's chances. And because she doesn't have those sort of perfect manners and everything, that's going to be so destructive. And I get, you know, why that kind of sets her on that path to thinking this is the right decision. But I feel like anyone with a heart is going to tell you, well, these people suck, right?
Yeah.
These people are terrible, judgmental people who aren't looking at the real human being and are judging just on appearances. And, you know, in time, Laurel's going to get that. I mean, right now she's young, you know, she's just in love with this guy. And I just don't believe that would last, that sort of embarrassed. I mean, she's basically doing the teen thing, right?
Of course.
Embarrassed by your mother who says something that doesn't sound right. I mean, every kid goes through that.
But the thing was that all the kids were making fun of her, you know, too. So that was just awful. And, you know, that broke my heart. The scene in the train.
It's so hard to watch.
Yes. And then Laurel slides into her mother's bed and snuggles with her as, as Babs pretends she's sleeping.
Yes. And I think it's so, I mean, Barbara Stanwyck just does such a stunning job with that scene. Mm. And I just, every time it just gets you watching it. And you think, you know, this was actually the only self-indulgent moment in this woman's life. And it turns out so terribly, and it ends up leading to all of the bad things that follow. And it's so hard to watch. You think all she wanted was a fun weekend. I mean, she just wanted to have some fun and actually spend some money like her husband's been doing all these years.
And never sending her any. What a monster.
Exactly.
And then she goes to the house and meets up with Barbara O'Neill, Mistress yes. Lady, smug, the way she looked at Stella and holding her hands. I wanted to, do you remember that?
It's so hard to, it's so hard to
dear.
Watch.
Dear.
Yes.
And then, like you say, beyond the snugness, how dull they are, she'll meet her mom gone because Stella's husband, the only thing they knew. Yeah, so the fact, let's go there. Under five.
Oh, right. The fact that she's, the fact that only this new woman even gets Stella's stupid lie to conceal her self-sacrificial motives says so much about his small-minded soul. I think psychologists would agree abandonment ain't exactly good for the good of a kid, even an adult one, and Stephen ought to know Laura well enough to recognize how well Stella's raised her. But why would we expect that, or that he'd care? He's got a pretty daughter on his arm. Why should he bother figuring out what makes her happy, much less spare an ounce of sympathy for his long-suffering ex-wife? A villain, plain and simple.
He is evil.
And yes.
But, you know, Laurel catches on, and she knows why her mother did it. And so then she puts on that big act. I don't want you. It's time to live my life. I'm going to marry Ed and all that other stuff. And Laurel buys it. And the ending of the movie, what do we see?
Just her watching the wedding from afar. And it's just in walking away so proudly because she's done what she should do, which, I mean, she thinks she has. I don't think she's done the right thing, but you can't fault her for obviously being the most generous mother.
And it's raining to boot.
Yes. Of course, it's got to be dramatic.
Yeah.
Right?
It's raining to boot.
You got to have the rain and the over-the-top scene. And what I think is so stunning about, again, Stanwyck's performance here is this could have so easily been really annoying as an ending. And because of her kind of restrained performance, it's a beautiful moment.
It is. And I get sad. And that's why I can't watch Stella Dallas that much, because it really, it gets to me. I watched it recently.
Yes.
I watched it probably just before I found your paper at your blog. And I was, you know, it's hard to watch because it just, you know what I mean? Like you said, it is hard to watch because you go, look at how she raised Laurel. Laurel is a kind, sensitive child. She is got, you know, she's beautiful. She put it all into it. Laurel's not like, yeah, hi, daddy.
Yes.
Chewing gum. she's a nice kid.
Yes. And she gets no credit for it.
Nope.
I mean, basically,
none.
All she gets. What's interesting is I do think Stephen appreciates that she gave her up. But I don't think he appreciates anything else. I don't think he recognizes that the reason his daughter is a good person or pleasant to be with has everything to do with the way she's been raised. I don't think he acknowledges any of that. The only thing that he really likes, no, of course not. All he likes is that, you know, now he gets her to himself.
This lovely young lady, well-bred, but,
yes.
You know, and he is, of course, the slug of slugs. Stella, John Bowles. You know what? You were a meanie in every movie I saw you in, and you were a stiff. So John, right on to him being a horrible, very horrible, despicable creature.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm just going to briefly touch on someone, and this is a little bit of controversy, controversial choice, who I think is a cad. And you told me, I wish I could find that, somebody in the villain blogathon a few years back picked him, right?
I think it was for that blogathon. It was definitely for a blogathon, and it makes sense that it was the villain one, but I'm not certain.
Okay, so I told Leah that my thought after this creepo, Stephen Dallas, is from Brief Encounter. Alex, Dr. Alex, the cad. He was a cad. He was a creep. And he meets Celia Johnson because she gets something like an ash in her eye. And she was absolutely her performance was incredible.
Yes.
I felt her. I felt sorry for her. I just, I wish she was dead. No, I don't. That's a terrible thing to say. The voiceovers in her head. I love that. She was great. But as Laura, she was wonderful. And she was this like housewife, I guess basic housewife. She had a husband that was home every night. She had two kids. And every Thursday she went into, I guess, the closest city. And she'd, I guess, have lunch. And her favorite place was the chemist because of the smell. The chemists and the soap. And yes. I get my children new toothbrushes. And then she goes to a movie. So that's her big whoop Thursday.
Right.
So then she goes to the train station, which is hysterical. Who's the lady? Una Thumb? Somebody, that woman who's in so many character films.
Oh, yes.
I can't think of her name offhand.
I love Una her. I O'Connor? Her name.
Is she the one who was in Frankenstein and all that stuff? She was
I'm
wonderful.
Not sure. I'm not sure.
But she was great. So our girl, Laura, gets an ash in her eye and they're trying to help her, roll your eyes around, do this, do that. Here's some water. And then in comes the doctor, Alec. And he comes and says, may I assist you? I'm a doctor. And so he gets it out of her. And then I guess they sit and have tea together. And they run into each other again the next week, right?
Yes.
It wasn't planned.
No, it's, this serendipitous moment.
Yes. And, how they find each other is she goes to lunch and there's not another seat in there. So he asks and he sees her and asks if he can sit down with her.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so she says, of course. And then they laugh at these like all women thing and they giggle and life is good. Then they go to a movie and then he says, meet me next Thursday. And she said, okay. So I don't really know how many Thursdays they had. Couldn't have been many.
No, it couldn't have been.
I'm falling in love with you. Do you feel the same way? And I just, all the way I get, okay, here he is. He's a doctor. He's been around the block a few times. And I don't think this is his first time at the park. And I think for Laura, she totally buys it. He's not boring like she thinks her husband is. And she's just is swept away by him. And then, they go to a few places, but the worst thing happens, which really shows me what a cad he is. Leah, why don't you tell us?
Well, I haven't seen it in a while, but isn't that when he takes her over to the apartment? It's his friend's apartment that clearly is his little bachelor pad.
Yeah.
That he gets temporary access to, kind of like in the apartment.
Yes. But the thing is, at first she doesn't come. And he says, well, I'm still going to go there anyway. Yes. So at first she doesn't come. And then she's thinking out loud to herself again and again and again.
Yes, there's a lot of thinking.
She does a lot of thinking in her head. Yeah. But I love her voiceovers. I think they're amazing. And so she decides to go there. And there's Alec ready for her. It makes me ill. And then the friend comes home early and she's like, oh my God. And she runs and she feels like,
and she's humiliated.
She feels like a cheap piece of, veal
garbage.
Chop.
Yeah.
She just feels like a horrible, horrible creature. She leaves her scarf there. And, the guy friend said, give me my key back. 'Cause he knows his wife and kids and all that other stuff. So poor Laura's wandering the streets, it's raining, the cops aren't arresting her because she does not look like a lady of the evening. They just wonder if she's okay.
Exactly. Yes.
And then she goes home. I don't remember if Alec was at the train station that time, but then he does his big move. I feel for the best for the both of us. I'm moving to Africa with my wife and children.
That's right.
Yes, he's moving on the same night. He already knew he was moving to Erin.
Yes, he knew he was moving.
And he still was going to, this woman was truly infatuated, thought it could go somewhere, the whole nine yards. And he's just playing her. In my eyes, you guys, I'm sorry. I just felt he was playing her. And he knew. Why would he invite her up to have a sexual encounter with him? And then how devastating is it for her to hear, oh, by the way, I'm going to that.
Yes, I'm just taking off afterward.
Yes.
It really reminds me, you know what character he reminds me of is the ghost in Mrs. Muir, the character that the Jean Turney character, you know, is the Jean Turney's character is obsessed with that guy, and he's the same way, just like, because she's so inexperienced.
The George Sanders guy?
Exactly. Yeah. She's not catching all the signs.
Uncle Luddy.
He's so awful. And he seems the same way to me. He's so obviously a cad to anyone who's ever had any experience.
And cad,
but she hasn't. Right, exactly. And it's just, it's so funny because when people say they find this romantic film, it just makes me wonder, like, what part of this do you find romantic?
I don't understand it. It's sad. It makes me sad. It makes me mad. And, you know, after that, he comes, he tells her that he's going to Africa, and then he tells her, but tell me, if you don't want me to go, I won't. Oh, right. And, like, she's not going to tell him to go. So, you know, like, he puts that at her after he tells her and springs it on her. And I just was like, you ick, you cad.
He reminds me, I just kind of wonder when I see that film and people think it's so romantic, if part of it isn't just that she has such an amazing performance in it and she sells the romance so well.
She really does. And
I mean, do you think that's why?
Maybe, but you know, I was on IMDb before, I talked to you and I'm reading, you know, the reviews, customer reviews, 10 stars. Yeah. What a romantic movie.
Wow.
10 stars. Ooh, you know, loving them both. And then some people, you know, go on about them committing adultery and that she's a creep too. But mostly, you know, it's 10 stars or 10, 9.
Well, it's a depiction of unhappiness, right? It's a great film.
But like, it does.
And but that's it.
And then she tries to kill herself. She goes out there, her big mouth friend, who ruins her last moments. And, but it was good. I'm glad she came in and busted up for that stupid Alec guy. And so, Cecilia, all of a sudden the woman's going to get some chocolates to take home on the train. And, the lovely, what's her name? Laura. Laura goes out and she tries to kill herself. And in her mind, she's saying, I wish I could say it was because of you to her husband or the children, but it wasn't. And that's so honest. Like I wasn't even thinking of you guys when I wanted to kill myself, but to kill herself over that creep.
Yeah.
And then she went home. Well, she was home. She was thinking about all this while she was home. And then she starts crying and her husband comes up to her and says, thank you for coming back to me.
Yes.
Do you think he thought, did you think he had any idea that she was having that kind of a thing?
I don't know. I think my sense of him was that he was more perceptive than, you know, the viewer initially gives him credit for, that maybe he didn't know specifically what was going on, but that he knew that she'd fallen out of love with him, that she wasn't happy. I feel like I thought he became in that moment a much more interesting character than he'd been in the rest of the film. And I liked that.
Me too.
I thought that was really a good moment.
I think that she didn't realize how good he was too.
Yes.
And I guess it's the generation, you know, because if you're in a marriage and you're bored or something, you should say, hey, guess what? Let's blah, blah, blah. But I guess in the stiff upper lip Brit kind of way, they didn't do that. But
they just didn't talk about it.
Yeah. I just thought, you know, him at the end was, he'd be with her till the end of her life. Mr. Trevor Howard, Alec, Dr. Alec, the cat, will be in Africa or anywhere else and meeting native babes. And you know it.
he's gonna cheat with everyone he can.
He's
it's
horrible.
True.
So that's my thought. I know you guys, and I'm so glad you agree with me on that. Because so many don't. Okay, I watched this movie the other night in honor of you writing this wonderful post, which I laughed my head off, and it's advice to a Fritz Lang heroine after too much crime TV, and I watch it too. We love it. You want to get to it?
Yeah, I think it's so funny. Since you, you know, like to focus a lot on crime TV and your true crime in your
true
podcast.
True crime. I've got some good stuff.
I thought it was really funny that we'd had a similar interest there. But yeah, I think it's really hilarious to watch. Sometimes when you'll see an older film like this, the way they present the police is hilarious.
Superman was one of the coppers.
Yeah, you're just thinking, okay, so this crime is committed in this film, and they're basically saying in all these broadcasts, you know, the police are closing in on you, the woman they think has done it, right? Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, there's no way the entire police force is focused on this one crime. There's no way that they've, first of all, just have this level of focus. But also just the idea that, you know, she's getting all this paranoia, this poor woman. And basically, you know, all that's happened to her, she's been distressed because her fiancé breaks up with her, right?
Was it her birthday that she was doing? She bought a new dress.
She buys this dress. She does this romantic thing.
Dinner,
of course,
candlelight.
He's off at the war.
His
pictures. She's got the champagne.
Yeah. And then she finally reads his letter.
And he's taken off with a nurse. And she's, you know, she's lost her fiancé. So she's depressed. So she goes, you know, out to a nightclub with the local cad.
Yeah.
And of course it's played by Raymond Burr.
Yes.
Should have been a flag, right?
His name was Harry Treble. But he thought when he called that, he was getting Ann Southern.
Yes.
Because he had flirted with her earlier in the day. But she said, what the heck? And she showed up. And Harry didn't seem to be too disappointed.
No, I mean, because clearly you saw that he was interested in her earlier as well. Mm-hmm. He just didn't think he could get her. And
yeah, because they told him that she had a soldier boy.
Exactly.
Yes.
So here she is. She goes and just everything she does is so foolish. First of all, she goes out with this guy and he's clearly horrible. And then he says there's a party at his house. It's just like, how many times have we heard this kind of line? And she actually believes it. So she goes back to his house.
But she's drunk. Then, remember how he keeps loading her up with those drinks?
With those terrible tropical drinks.
Yes, which are very strong. He said, keep them coming. Keep them coming.
Exactly. Exactly. And she gets there and, you know, he tries to rape her and she's not even sure because she passes out whether she's the one who hurt him in response because she wakes up and he's been murdered, right, with the poker stick. And she knew that she had at some point tried to fight him off. So she doesn't know if she's done it or not, right? So there she is, you know, thinking she might have murdered somebody. She doesn't even know because she had been so drunk.
Blackout City.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then there's all these warnings that the police are out to get her. So she acts so paranoid and starts doing this really insane sort of stuff, like burning her dress because they've seen her dress.
Well, what did they say? The deaf lady said it was like, what, taffeta or something? Because she could hear the way it sounded and it was her dress. But first, she leaves the joint without her shoes and
no coat.
So she runs with her pocketbook. She runs home.
So there they are looking for a woman who has this size shoe and
size 5.5 B.
Exactly. Wearing this taffeta dress. And, you know, a couple people saw her in the restaurant, mm-hmm. but really they don't have a single thing on this woman. And she's so convinced that, arrest is imminent. And I think I just was really cracking up. I was watching the whole film and I just couldn't stop laughing because I thought, you know, anyone who's watched any crime TV knows or read any crime, you know, stories whatsoever knows you got to have some evidence. There's just absolutely nothing on her except that she's flipping out. She's
and
acting.
Her 5.5 and B shoes. Yeah.
But you're thinking, you know, it's not a small city. There's going to be there will be a lot of people who have that size shoe. It's just,
yeah.
Just there she is in the backyard burning her dress. And
that's a riot. And so mean to her roommates.
Yeah, it's just hilarious to watch. And of course, Ann Baxter is just playing it with full drama, which I just found so funny. And yeah, it's one of those films where the dated quality of it makes it better. Because it's just so funny to watch now to think that.
Oh, I loved it.
Right. that anybody would think that they, you know, the police were just about to get her, but also just this reporter who supposedly is helping her.
Richard Conte.
Yes. Who's such a terrible tabloidy kind of awful reporter.
He's like an oily creep and he keeps a little black book. What does that say?
Yes,
like four
exactly.
Stars. Hubba hubba. Loser. You know.
And not too bright. I mean, she calls the reporter pretending she's someone else. And anyone could tell that she was talking about herself.
I know. But she knew too much information.
Right. It made no sense that someone else would call and he just totally falls for it. It's just so funny.
And he falls for her. She could
yes,
be the
and
one.
For her.
She could be
exactly.
The one.
Unless, of course, she defended herself against a rapist, in which case she's a horrible human being.
Trollop. So she says that she's not her. Does he mean what he says? And what happens? She brings the sister, right? She brings
Ann Southern to kind of help her out, and she's gonna, you know, see if he's okay, and it's just the whole thing. It just gets more and more ludicrous, and he finally, of course, figures out that she is, in fact, this person who has
the blue dahlia.
The blue dahlia. It's just, yeah. Or the blue gardenia, right?
Oh, yeah.
I kept thinking of the black dahlia.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking the black dahlia. Blue gardenia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you have to figure they felt like they couldn't name it the black dahlia, so they named it that instead.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's funny. It doesn't seem like, you know, a Fritz Lang film to me in a lot of ways.
You know what?
Yeah.
I didn't even know he did it until I read your blog.
Yeah,
I was like, "You've got to be kidding me!" Also, in this, you know, they would have women call in, and they had this one woman who called, and I don't believe this, and she's like, "Oh, I have 8.5 Bs," you know, because she was confessing to the crime.
Oh, right.
And he says, and she said, "But I guess I could get into eights," and he said, "Hey, sorry, lady, your feet's too big." And I don't think anymore, because I think we're growing and everything. Do you know what the most popular size is? And the most is 10 size.
Oh,
10.
Is it really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And I used to wear a 9 and now I wear a 9.5. So I just laugh at the shoe size. Size 5. I wore those in second grade, people. Come on. Did you wear size 5s or are you wearing size 5.5 Bs? You're guilty. I'm arresting you, Leah.
Yeah, I was always jealous of people who had such small feet because they got all the sales, right?
Right. Now I'm proud of my dogs, you know. If I got big, they're not the biggest feet in the world. Do you want to know? Okay, people, this is True Stories of Tinseltown. I have a tidbit for you, a very silly tidbit. Audrey Hepburn and Jackie Onassis had size 11 feet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Just a little true story of Tinseltown. So, but also at the end, now this chick who did it, and he changed his number. He treated her like dirt. I guess they were obviously trying to put across that he got her pregnant. Because she said, "You've got to help me, Harry. I can't go through this alone." And she was the one who, am I spoiling it? Maybe I shouldn't say it. I won't say it, but it's an interesting story. And of course, the guy is there. He sees that Anne Baxter is truly the lovely lady that he thought she was. And she wasn't the trollop or, you know, rotten, you know, horrible woman. But she gave him the cold shoulder because that was on advice of her friend. What's her name? The cutie pie. The little lady.
Ann Southern. She was very likable.
I love her. I love, yes, I always Crystal. Like, she's so good. I always love Ann Southern. I think she's great. Letters to Three Wives.
Yes.
All this great stuff. Okay. And now Leah and I discovered other things we had in common that we like. I mean, Barbra Streisand is our favorite actress.
Yes.
We both like Van Halen. I think he's extremely underrated.
Oh, Van Heflin?
Yes, Van Halen. Yes.
Oh, I like Van Halen's entertaining too.
Yes, so do I. Jump. I'm sorry, you guys. My mind's a little scrambled today. I had a 3-hour tour trying to get to where I'm getting to today. It was just very weird. And yes, so Van Heflin, I love. So do you. You know who broke my heart? You know, it's not a great movie. Airport, the first Airport.
Oh, yes. It's hard to watch him in that.
Because he feels like such a loser. His wife is waitressing. And the only thing he can think of to give her a break is to take out that insurance. And I know he's going to kill like 300 other people.
Yes.
But he was just heartbreaking to me. And we both love Mae. And I used to do Mae West imitations before I knew she was. Through
Did
my cousin.
You really?
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I made up one by myself. But I don't talk like Mae anymore. I did. And I was only like 6 when I made this up. Because my cousin would say, "Oh, Miss West, with a figure like yours," he'd feed me the lines, "you'll have men draped around your feet." This isn't the one I made up. I guess I did. "I'd rather have them around my neck." And remember I told you people call me Nay? But this is the one I really love. And I was really young. One plus one is two. I got two men coming over here in 1 hour, so you better skidoo. Isn't that a good one?
That's marvelous.
For a 7-year-old kid to come up with that. I was a genius, damn it.
I love it. I love it.
And we also have this in common, which you just did. I'm in love with Nick Charles. And I absolutely love Nick Charles, but I absolutely love William Powell.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us? Yeah, he's fab. Why don't you tell us why you chose the lovely Nick Charles, a.k.a. William Powell, as your dreamboat?
Yes, and one of the things I love about how wonderful he is that I do not find him traditionally attractive at all. But his presence, I mean, he has so much confidence as a character and, of course, as an actor. But he's so funny. It's mainly how funny he is. He's
great.
Oh, his facial expressions, and he just delivers those lines in such a wonderful way. And I was already in love with the character because I love the book as well. I think The Thin Man is such a brilliantly written book.
I've never read the book, just saw the series, which I love.
But the series just captures the spirit of it so well and the spirit of his character. And I think I started coming up with a list of all of the reasons that I love Nick Charles. And I just had to stop.
Because you had so many.
I got to 12 and I just thought, okay, you know, when people are, you know, participating in a blogathon, there's a lot of different posts they're reading. So I got to keep this short. So I had to just come up with, you know, just stop myself at some point. But I think, you know, he's just so funny. He's so smart, but he's not arrogant about it.
He's kind. He has the most beautiful dimples.
Yes. And it's just hilarious banter with, you know, his wife, Nora.
They're perfect. Oh, my God.
They're
what a
perfect
team.
Together. Myrna Loy is wonderful in it. And I think, you know, it's funny. I don't think you see many movies ever really where people have this kind of perfect banter. And so I'm in love with any film with perfect banter. And so, of course, The Thin Man is wonderful. But I look for that. And one of the things that I really love about this, The Thin Man series, is you don't care about the mysteries at all.
No.
Not at all. And I think it's hilarious because Dashiell Hammett was a Pinkerton detective. And the fact that he writes these mysteries where you don't care about the mystery, you care about the characters, I think is really interesting. And he just presents these beautiful three-dimensional characters who are just so much fun.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's it.
Did you ever see the second one with James Stewart as a murderer? Oh, talk about. My mother
so
and I
funny.
Were watching that and she said, oh, gracious. Oh, no. He's not a bad guy. That's bad.
Well, it was fun how shocking it was that it ended up being Stewart, but it also was probably one of Stewart's worst performances.
It really was. That was the thing. He just stunk to the high heavens. That was just
utterly
not
unconvincing.
For him.
It was just not, not good.
And even if my mother's going to go, oh, gracious. Ooh. Yeah, that was bad. Okay, so tell us your reasons. How do I love thee, Nick? Let me count the ways. You are. Okay. Number one.
So number one was Quick with a Quip. Number two is the perfect mixture of man and kid.
Oh, yes.
And that scene with him playing with the toy, the toys that he's gotten for Christmas. Number three is a generous host, especially to strange characters and party crashers.
I love that. And what I love about Myrna Loy's character is, oh, Nick knows the most interesting people because she's this heiress, you know, and she's down with it. She just loves his friends. It's fun.
Yes, she loves it. And she's just orders a billion sandwiches.
She's so
for
cute.
These people.
I love when she comes in the beginning and she said, how many has he had? Okay, bring me that amount.
Yes.
And she catches
up.
I love that.
Well, and with Party Crashers, the second one is so hilarious because they come home for New Year's and people are having a party at their house and they just go with it. And just, I think that just sort of, the charming nature of how they handle Party Crashers. Number four, he's an excellent judge of canines, obviously.
Yes, he is.
Number five, averse to pretensions.
Seth, he is just a down-to-earth kind of guy.
Exactly. Number six, he's able to explain martini mixing via dance moves.
Go, baby, go. I'd love to cha-cha with Nick.
Wouldn't you, though?
This is
such
man.
A great scene. Number seven, he's smarter than everyone, but without ever taking himself seriously.
Yes.
Number eight, he's easygoing and relaxed when exposed to danger or annoying relatives. And number nine, he's supporter of the weaker types around him.
And they all are, 90%.
They all are. No one can solve the crimes except for him, for example. Number 10, he's the owner of a confident swagger and sexy voice.
Yes, he does.
And William Powell just has an amazing voice.
Not like John Bowles.
Exactly.
He is
not
so
at all.
Cute. I love his voice.
It's wonderful. Number 11, that he's appreciative of Nora's charms, even enough to tolerate her requests for eggs in the middle of the night. And number 12, that he's entertaining on every occasion and every place in every decade.
And yes, he is. And yes. I love your sigh.
Yes.
Who could be better?
Exactly. He's just
dreamy. I really fall for him in everything. I loved him in Libeled Lady. I think the cutest picture of him ever is him when Myrna Loy's trying to hide, and he's got this cute little cap on. He just looks adorable, and he's got these big dimples. And the way he deals with his true life sweetheart, Jean Harlow, was great.
Yes.
And it was just such a wonderful movie. And what was the movie where he used to be a gangster, but he lost his memory and he became nerd? Remember?
Is that I Love You Again or something like that?
Yes.
Yes, I love that one too. It's just so goofy and strange, but it's very charming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked Libeled Lady a lot too. I love the fishing scene. I mean, that's.
He did it himself. Yes.
He came up with that entire scene.
He was amazing. That is my favorite. That was one of my best things about that, other than his dimples next to. Oh. I have to find that shot. Or I'll, if I, oh, I do. I'll take a screenshot of it with those dimples. Holy Toledo.
Yes.
Oh, and the other ones are, he was fabulous. And I was saying to my friend, I said, look at that. He is flipping. He's doing, that is him. That is him doing all of this work.
That's amazing.
Like I read. Oh, I had a guy who wrote a book on Hedy Lamarr, and he said when she did, what was it, the guy, Samson and Delilah, that, what was that guy's name? Mr. Man. What was his name?
Wait, I haven't seen that movie.
Goliath, but he was in I Wake Up Screaming. He was in, what is his name? Victor Mature.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So she said he was such a weasel, he wouldn't even wrestle the lions that have been defanged, all their teeth gone, and no nails, because he was afraid he'd get hurt. She said, I would have done it in a minute. So it kind of made her sick.
But look at Mae West. Right there in I'm No Angel, right?
Yes.
The Lion Tamer.
I love her. You know what? That's My Little Chickadee, she wrote. And I love that movie only for so many reasons. But I love when the Indians come on and she's like shooting behind her back and the front, sideways, forward. And nobody else can do it. And also I love seeing how she and W.C. Fields crack each other up on the train. You can literally see them. They are truly laughing.
Well, I love that when she does anything brave, she's so nonchalant about it.
Yes.
It's like she's just kind of walking
exactly. in. Exactly. Hiya. You know, hilarious. She's just, how are you? Yeah, she's perfect. And I just love her. And she's also my birthday, August 17th, me and May.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Nice.
Yes. And I just love her. And I think we did pretty darn good there today, there, lady. What do you think?
Yes. Thank you. I really enjoyed talking with you.
I hope you come back on because there's so much stuff to talk about and you're really fun.
Absolutely.
And you know your stuff. So I would love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Thank you very much for talking with me.
It is my pleasure. So you guys, this is Leah Williams, and please go to her blog. Cary Grant won't eat you.com and you will love it. It is funny. She's smart, funny, and you will just love it. And also go to her Facebook page, under the same name and follow and like her. And I will also link you guys up when I post this. So, thanks again for listening, everybody. And Leah, thank you for being such a great guest. And
thank you.
You made me laugh. You made me think. And I hate John Bowles. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Blue Guardia. Now I'm alone with you. And I'm all so blue. She has tossed us aside. And like you, Guardia, once I was near her heart. After the teardrops start,
where our teardrops to hide. I lived for an hour. What more can I tell? Love bloomed like a flower, then the petals fell. Blue gardenia thrown to a passing breeze, but pressed in my book of memories. I lived for an hour. What more can I tell? Love bloomed like a flower, then the petals fell. Blue gardenia thrown to a passing breeze, but pressed in my book of memories.